Hi, Tyler. It's nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
What faith are you? What?
What do you mean?
Where do you go to church, or do you?
I'm not in a church right now.
Oh, but that's cool. We're not either. So.
I like that.
Should do well with us. I just felt like it would be good if we had discussion, because oftentimes different ones speak that won't. And so I think it's good for God to have his divine expression through every person that chooses it or has some idea that they are divine. I think we often forget that, and have to be reminded that we are actually eternal beings. We don't think that we are, but our divinity is eternal. And just because I don't remember anything before I came here particularly, doesn't mean that I wasn't somewhere. So what's important is this life that I live now in this body, and how I live it, both the divine and the human part. So, what is the scripture about the deeds? We are held accountable for the deeds in this body. Something like that. That's rough, but it's not exact. However, the King James was not exact in hardly anything. If you study it, you find out that they worded everything different. And if you're a good Roman Catholic, you'd know that. The church at Nicaea changed everything so to suit the religious purpose of the day. However, what we call religion is growing, and people are learning that the divine part is within each and every person. Every breath is his breath, because that's life. And we don't even think about our breath till we're losing it. Then when we get shortness of breath, it kind of gets our attention. As we get older and things begin to change in our bodies, knowing that this thing that I live in is not eternal, but what lives within me is eternal. And so that's really beautiful. I don't know what will be after this, or I will be. I'm not concerned about that. It takes all I can do to get through a day, keeping my mentality kind of where it should be, on an even keel, you know, instead of acting like something that's royally divine, which I despise in people, that self-righteous thing that we all can have from time to time. And my humanity, I was sent here to be a human being. And to have a family to serve and be a part of. And that's beautiful. It's not like God sent us here with this great expectation of us being something that the ego, a picture that the ego would draw. And all of our egos would draw pictures from time to time to. Especially, it's a putter downer. If you're not successful in your eyes or somebody else's eyes, then you have that put down, depressed feeling. And I have a lot of that in this generation, and that disturbs me. Young folks not really knowing who they are. And I don't believe they can know who they are without some discipline. And I'm not saying it needs to be harsh or severe, but there needs to be self-control above all things. Paul says, get your body under subjection. Don't let your body tell you what to do and where to go, what to eat and what to drink, but you tell your body what to do. So I think he spoke pretty plain. I'm not so sure that was the mind of the father, but it was for him, and I like it, and it works for me. So I think it's awesome. We can talk about that if y'all like. I don't want to sit here and be doing all the talking this morning. Karen always starts this off to me so beautifully because she and I normally never communicate about worship, what we're going to talk about or teach. And I usually don't know either. I just have a little idea of what my party is, but I don't know. I don't study for you. I'm not you. So each guy has to do that for himself if he chooses. But last week I was sharing on the resurrection when Mary was standing at the sepulcher and Jesus appeared in another form as a gardener. And of course she didn't know him. He was standing there all the time. And there's so many situations we get in or get through, like if, you know, we're having a difficult time or a hard moment. We act like God is not present. And he kind of taps us on the shoulder after it's over and you feel about like a wimp. Because there he was the whole time in the midst of that. And that's sort of what happened to Mary. She's, with all her being, crying out, "Where have they moved my Jesus to?" And so he asked her, you know, the word, what he said to her, he spoke to her. And when he spoke her name, when he said Mary, when he speaks, like Karen says, each name, whomever the person is, man, woman, or child, if he speaks your name, you'll never forget that voice. And he said to her, "Mary." And she immediately said, "Rabboni," which is a very high order in Israel. And then, because probably it had been her habit to throw herself at his feet or into his arms because she loved him, he was her master in every way, he said to her, "Don't touch me." Well, again, King James really messed that up. It does not say, "Don't touch me" at all. The original Greek, he says to her, "Don't hold me on this physical realm," just like she said. If you just know Jesus the man, you're missing the whole thing. If you don't know him as divinity, as living with that Christ within you, that's the hope of glory, then it's just religious. It doesn't mean a thing. But it means so much more to know him in the power of his resurrection, because we are that resurrection. He actually is living in each and every one of us. That breath that's passing through us is resurrected breath. And he's saying to us, just move on beyond this point. Don't get stagnant here. Don't, that's what he was telling her. Don't hold me in this place, because in resurrected order, things are much different. And I think we're learning to live in that resurrected order, and it's so much different. And man is mistaking it and saying everything's God. Well, that is Bolsheviki, good grief. You know everything is not God. God sees and allows things, but the killing, the raping, the hate, all of those negative things are not the Father. Of course they're not. So he makes a body of believers, he has a body of believers, always has, that is able to rise above that and keep some sort of righteousness walking about upon this earth. So it's kind of a fine line. As we were looking at the word last Sunday, it says, study to show yourself approved unto God. Help me with it.
A workman.
That needeth not to be ashamed. Rightly dividing. And that rightly dividing is such a big word. I mean, you could teach on it a year. It really means to dissect. It doesn't mean just cut into something. It means take the thing apart. When you hear an argument between two people, you kind of need to hear both sides. At least both sides, and look at it, the whole thing, and see how it's affecting each and every one. Now, each party would tell you they're right, but most of the time, neither one is absolutely right. Or we might be so right, we're wrong. I've been right like that before, that it doesn't help. So if my righteousness does not touch and impregnate somebody else, it's pretty flimsy seed.
And exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees.
Absolutely.
That's what that really means.
Well, religion.
The Pharisees were very self-righteous.
Oh, yeah. I'm fair, you see. That's what
law. The law was everything.
Yes.
Well, religion is, you know, as you know, it means to bind. So, the very thing that we, tool that we attempt to use becomes a millstone around our neck. And that's what people, you know, like Jesus and predecessors that came before him came to tear asunder and show a different order of things.
Yes.
Change our thinking.
You know, it just, the things that he said were so, like I said earlier, were so profound, simple, that they really couldn't be refuted. You know, and that's why he caused such an uproar, because he was so wise that he confounded the Sadducees and Pharisees. And probably made them really frustrated and angry.
Oh, yeah, I think they were very jealous.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
That's why he ended up on the cross.
He put himself on the cross.
Well, I mean, he had to come in and disturb the waters. There's
yes.
No change in, you know, if there's no, it's like an earthquake, you know. If there's no collapse of things within us somehow, there can be no change. If things are okay, why would you want to change? Everything's perfect. And sometimes it's the taking away of everything, a real collapse within you, like an earthquake, for you have to go through like a forest. You know, if lightning strikes a forest, it is amazing. They can go through a forest a few days later and find new growth. Mm-hmm. You know, so that whole forest will regrow, you know, like a restoration for that whole forestry. Of course, they'll go in, they'll plant plants to get going faster, but and trees and so on. But this is good. It's a good thing when things are disrupted in your life. Move around the furniture.
Well, I think Jesus had to get into a place of a mindset that he accepted for his fate. There had to be some time. I don't think he just born and was accepted his fate. That's bull. If he was a person, a human being,
well, it
too.
Tells us that, Terry. Yeah. I mean, that was
so he had to, like us, come to a place of acceptance, and that's always the first step in anything. Change is hard. I'm telling you.
Well, that's what the 40 days in the wilderness is all about. It's about him coming to terms with his own divinity,
yes,
and accepting what was in front of him. You know, I've said this before, but so much of the what we call the Bible, particularly the King James, is so mistranslated that we don't really understand what is even being told to us.
Right.
You know, just the word devil, for instance, is simply a hyphenated way that they would write about evil. Because used to, the medieval Dark Age writers, D was, with a little hyphen, was a shortened way of saying the. Mm-hmm. So, D, evil.
Mm-hmm. So they made it a word.
Yes.
So we created something that never really existed, and you know, now it's red and got pitchfork and horns. And, you know, and all these things came from something else, came from another time period, came from another culture, came from, you know, another understanding.
Really?
And it's became adopted and used by religion as a tool to undermine divinity. You know, to keep people bound, to keep them in some sort of spiritual slavery. And people are waking up. I mean, it's the age of Aquarius. And the waters of understanding are being poured upon mankind.
Yes.
Now, what do we do with it after that? We'll see.
Yeah, that's definitely.
But that's part of the problem. That's part of what, like, what's happening with the people that you're talking about. I think that, you know, they do have the, some of the understanding, but it's muddled along with their own ego. And it'll just take time for those things to, you know, to work themselves out, I think.
Well, we have that spark that when light is thrown upon that, you know, a seed has to receive moisture, it has to receive life for it to grow. It's deep within the ground. So that's what's happening with you. There's a seed within you that he's attempting to throw the water of the word on, so to speak, the word, which represents the word and his light, his life. He's attempting to bring that forth within you. And then as you, as it comes forth within you, you begin to know the truth. You begin to see the difference of the way of, you begin comparing, shall we say, what the life that you're living and the life that he's speaking to you. They that are of the truth hear my voice, he said. They that are of the truth hear my voice, so they can hear. He's been talking. He's been talking.
Well, it's
for centuries. You know,
it's the same parable that, you know, that he told about scattering of seeds.
Yeah. You
know, yes.
Where they fall.
That good seed. That you know, good seed is that which is going to come forth, but the rest.
It's also the same thing that Rochus is probably his favorite, was the treasure in the field.
Well, there was depth of earth. Yes. Where there was depth of earth, that's that seed fell on good ground, not stonier or hard ground or by the wayside. There had to be depth of earth. There has to be place for that seed within you, for it not to become an aberration, you know.
Really?
Or to be aborted.
It has to be prepared ground.
Yes.
You know, they can, every spring, go out here and plant all the seed you want to or scatter seed, but if you don't break up the fallow ground, you might as well forget it. You're going to reap a strange crop.
Yes.
So it takes a lot of a prepared heart that really wants to hear. And I don't feel much of that most of the time for in mankind. I don't feel a hunger to really hear truth. And it's like grab it and growl, fast food. Just feed me fast, anything, and forget about the preparation. But you and I know the selection and preparation of food and how you do it with your heart, placing it up on the table, is very important, and the presentation of that food. You don't, it's not slop, and we're not hogs. we're human beings, and we need to eat civilly, and I'm not on to us about table manners, but
it's not
just saying it's important.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking it's not instant gratification. I think
please.
With the phones that we have now, do you all have a phone? Do you, Kyle, you have a phone? With everything that we've got that is so instant, you're in touch with everything. You're in touch with the world, actually, through that phone. Everything that's going on in the world. And you want it now.
Yeah.
You know, some people are really addicted to their phones. They've got to have them around them all the time and checking on them all the time. But, I mean, they're a good thing because at least it connects you to the world. There's a lot of things going on in the world, and that's good. But I think it also kind of spells this kind of thing out to us that we got to have this knowledge, this information right now. We cannot wait for it. And so this seed that's been planted within you that she's talking about, this patience to wait upon it, to grow within you, and to see its growth within you.
Absolutely.
You know, it is happening. I mean, but it's a deep, mysterious thing going on within you. It's not out there where, you know, you have readily, you can readily access it like a phone. You have to dig deeper.
Yes. Absolutely.
All knowledge is temporary. Yeah.
No, it's so true, honey. It's kind of passing and it has to grow.
Changes.
Yeah.
Well, and you know that with your phones. How quickly do things change 24 hours later? You read something, you're part of something on your telephone, you're devastated, right? I know, I've been through that, some of that, the drama of it.
Yeah,
and the next thing, everything's changed.
Yeah,
it's another drama.
I'm not on the kind of science. If I do anything, it's a performative, something I need at the moment. Like, for example, betas, I got a beta, and so I've been looking up the information about how to take care of and care. Really kind of opened up my mind, sitting there reading that. This is an animal that's responding to me. You know, that, I mean, it's beautiful. You know, different things. You don't tap the glass, I found that out. You put your fingers in there, they learn who you are. You just touch it. And she can see me coming. It's just phenomenal how in a couple of times a day, paying attention to something else, how it will respond to you. Something that simple. You know, and then reading about it, the information, where they came from, just, you know, to me it's just interesting, other than all that other garb, the news. And, the news unsettles me, so I quit watching it so much.
Yeah.
I'm not going to miss anything, so they're going to put it there. Whoever's going to be president is going to be president. I don't have any control over that.
That's right.
Period.
That's right. It's going to happen,
yeah.
With or without you.
Trying to keep it simple.
Well, we get, you know, I say this a lot, I guess, but I think we do. We get hung up on what we call facts and get so hung up on it we can't see truth anymore. And facts and truths are not the same thing.
Absolutely. We've been talking a lot about others are different ones that are really calling everything God, and I like to know for me, you know, so I just share my little part of information with you. What others say don't mean a whole lot to me, and I don't mean that I don't pay attention to what you're saying, I do, but I want to know how I really feel about something. It's not so much just the knowing, but how does it affect me personally? So, anyway, calling everything God, I'm not comfortable with at all. It's, to me, like a two-year-old statement that's imbecile. I mean, think about life, folks. But anyway, so as I was thinking on that, this scripture came to mind, and I know that the foundation of God standeth sure. And when I hear different ones saying everything is God, to me they've gotten away from the very foundation that we walk upon. The foundation has to be steadfast and unmovable within us. Over here in Matthew, in the third chapter, John was fiery. This is John the Baptist that I'm speaking of. And he says now, speaking of Jesus, the axe is laid to the root. He doesn't deal with the branches and things outside so much of us as he looks in our heart and where the thing originates to begin with and deals with it there. And I just think that's awesome that he does it that way. The axe is laid to the root of the trees. Therefore, every tree which bringeth forth not good fruit is hewn down and cast in the fire, as she said. And that we know that's not a literal fire. Give me a break. And then he says, but he that cometh after me is mightier than I, whose shoes I'm not worthy to bear. For he shall baptize you with the Holy Ghost and with fire. Well, what is the Holy Ghost? It's the holy thing that you can't see. A ghost is not something that appears. It's something that is in you that you feel. It's a holiness, which is a righteousness, so to speak. And fire, so he tests that thing to make sure that it's holy in you. Whose fan is in his hand, he will thoroughly purge his floor. So these that are saying that everything is God, to me, it's totally got away from the foundation. So he's going back to the foundation to deal with these things again. Because folks have left the foundation. I mean, if you don't get the foundation right, you that build, what happens to the building?
You can't build without foundation.
The foundation has to be correct, am I right? Before you build up on something. And so, to me, that's what a lot of religion is doing, and people we know and read after. And I'm just shaking my head and going, what is the matter with you?
Well, that's
where could your head be? I mean, besides, I can't say it's not clean.
The whole thing that they're doing is, it just creates a lack of personal responsibility. That's all it is.
Really? I agree.
And that's not right. I mean, that's not going to work. That's not going to serve you in the long run.
Absolutely not.
Well, and there's a lot of people that actually walk around thinking, and I know someone very, a family member, shall I say, that did go to church but never had received, talk about being reborn, had never received the life of him within her. I mean, she just was going through the motions. But she was fine just as she was. You didn't dare tell her anything. She was fine. She wasn't a person who didn't seek growth. And there are a lot of people out there that are like that, you know, in the church and out of the church, that think they're just fine, just like they are. And I don't get that. I mean, I don't get where the hunger is to do more, be better.
Well, it's not you know, not all are called, I suppose, but, you know, I mean, some people are just sheep.
But for me, it used to be, well, I can be a better person. And then when I came into this message, I knew it had nothing to do with me. You know, I had to get rid of all of that idea, because this is a work that I do, lest you boast, you said. Then it becomes a work that you do. So the self-improvement stuff, the books and all, and this desire to improve myself, that had to go by the wayside, actually.
Really?
That he might come and be present within me. You know, not that all that I was Not that he's thrown out the baby with the bathwater, but there's a lot of concepts and understanding and knowledge and stuff that had to go. It just wasn't him, you know, and I had to find that out, you know, for myself. And when Nehemiah went back to build that wall, is really was, they rebuilt the temple, but they had left out the wall and they either didn't see it, that it needed to be rebuilt. It was a shambles, or they didn't care. But that really was the foundation. I'm trying to get that. I'm trying to understand that. That was necessary. He saw that that was necessary. What is it? It's just a wall, right? But really indicated the foundation around that temple,
right,
that was important, without which it wasn't complete.
No. Absolutely.
Well, even if you build a house, and correct me, and you don't do something right with the foundation, sooner or later in building that house, you're going to find the mistake. It's going to go to a mistake. You will find it, I promise you that. It will show up. So
we look at everything. You can't see the forest for the trees, really. We look at everything else. Our eyes are fixated on other things other than going to let that axe go to the root. There's a root, there's an issue with it. There's something going on within you that he's trying to cause you to see. What is it? What is it? Instead of casting your eyes elsewhere, you know, especially if it keeps coming back. Maybe we should be looking at that. That part of your root that you want to focus on.
The absurdity in thinking that God is everywhere and in everyone, it's beyond absurdity. Because if you believe anything about anything, God gave man choice. The first time he gave him choice, God wasn't in charge anymore. He was not in charge. He gave that to men. He gave that to mankind. And if I thought God was in charge right now, what's the point?
Yeah, we're not robots.
I mean, to me, that it's just an absurd suggestion that God is all in all in each human being.
He is.
I believe that it can be, the potential is there, but I don't believe it's there. Period. In anyone, totally.
Really?
Is there a portion of God in every person? Well, you would hope so.
Really?
But the portion depends on the person, not God.
Yes, it does.
Right. That's that seed that's in the, deep in the earth, but if it doesn't receive any water or light, it stays there.
That's what these people have done. They're focusing on one fact and making it truth. It's not truth. It's just a portion of truth.
Really? Well, I certainly agree.
So can people have a large portion of God? Yeah. Can people choose not to have that portion anymore? Obviously, we've seen people do it. We've all done it.
Yeah.
I mean, don't point your finger at somebody because you've all done it. I've done it. And I know other people here have done it. Daily we do it.
We go through dry places sometimes.
Well, we go through wet places we want to be. We don't want God involved.
It's just not holy.
And that's called choices.
In the muck.
And those choices are generally our choices. Even if someone impacts us negatively in our life, our reaction to that is still our choice.
Yes.
That reminds me of when I was in a drawing class once and we had to draw. And I couldn't figure out what to put on that. It was a blank piece of paper. He said, even you're not putting something on there is a choice.
Absolutely.
Or where you decide to put that.
Absolutely.
Where you decide to take your pen.
How big you decide.
Your drawing instrument. If you decide to go up here and the way in the right hand side, start it there, or way down here and start it there, that's a blank canvas.
Absolutely.
And that's all we are. We're a blank canvas, and we might not write upon that at all.
From every moment, from moment to moment, not just the start of the day.
Really?
So if you got problems, you can look back and see what choice you made to be there. Can you go back and rectify those choices? Probably not sometimes. There's nothing you can do about it. Some things that are done are done. There's no changing it. But it's what do you do from that moment on.
Meaning?
Not to satisfy somebody else necessarily, although our choices do impact everyone around us.
Yes, they do.
They totally do.
Absolutely.
But they impact us the most. If they don't, then there's something wrong with your internal combustion engine. That being your brain. That's just the way it is. And I don't believe that anything is fixed. I don't believe my next moment is fixed. So the next thing I'm going to say
right. Is
choices. And where we get in trouble, I'm talking about myself. Sometimes we make these choices in our own volition, not asking anything of anybody for any input before we make those choices. Whether it be friends, relatives, wives, husbands, children, God. So, I don't believe God's in charge, folks, unless you want Him to be in charge. If you want Him to be in charge, I think He'll be in charge for you. Not in charge, that may be the wrong one. He will help you
make
decisions
that
are more complicit for your individual needs, wants, desires, and the best for you. To me, I don't know, that would be God for me.
There's always, this probably has nothing to do with this, but that saying, if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a noise? Well, for years, I was like, well, what are you trying to think of, okay, what's the correct answer? You know? So
if there's no one to hear it, does it make a noise?
Right. Well, it's going to make a noise whether you're there to hear it or not.
If there's nobody around, does it make a noise?
To me, it doesn't matter. It's still going to make a noise.
Only if you can hear it.
No, it's still going to make a noise whether you're there or not.
Well,
when it falls, then you're making noise. There's no doubt about that. It's about you being there, being present.
But it used to drive me crazy, that saying. Get it. Not really a wrong answer anywhere. To me, it doesn't matter if it does or don't. I don't even care.
But
I don't care.
To me,
it's
going to make a noise if it falls. I don't care if anybody's there to hear it. It's going to make a noise.
The physical laws of nature is it's going to make a noise.
Logically, yes, it's going to make a noise. Yeah. I agree with that.
Well, it's like the old Buddhist saying, what's the sound of one hand clapping?
That's just something some idiot was sitting around and didn't have nothing else.
That was an idiot there.
Well, what they love to do is to ask the questions. The questions are more important than the answers.
Yes.
Yeah. Really?
So your answer's not important, but your questions are.
Yes.
Well, there's never really the end to an answer.
A good teacher will ask questions, that's it. Really. A really good teacher just asks questions.
I think that our core of our life, I don't know, is kind of like we're talking to people, you know, if you talk to each other, that's how we learn each experience. I mean, I might have an experience and I don't know that you've had the same experience, that you might get something from it. You don't have to tell anybody. Inside you'll go, okay, well, there's kind of an answer or there's another solution. You understand what I'm saying? There's always answers. So if you don't talk, then you never get any answers. You have to talk to people.
And question things.
Huh?
And yeah. Question is good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with that too, a measure. But I believe in observing people. That answers a lot of questions for me. I don't have to ask them because I know.
Well, no, that's not what I mean. I'm talking about
behavior.
In the circle. Like in the circle that's kind
of
this
is sharing.
Well, what I'm saying by question, I'm saying just don't accept that. This is the way it is. You know,
yeah, not everything's black and white.
When we don't question things, our world gets just smaller and smaller and smaller. We just accept, you know, everything is, it is. It is what it is. You know, that's good as to being accepting. I'm not saying we shouldn't be accepting, but I'm saying that, I mean, there's more to everything. There's more to Penny than what I see.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is an example. I have a
friend. There's some stuff going on within
her.
You. There's some deep stuff going on with you, you know, but I, you know, and to look, try to, you know, to discern and look within that, you know. Whatever you're looking at, it could be a rock. You know, that's not just a rock. There's life within that rock, I found out.
much more to that rock than what we know.
But this is an example of what I mean. Talking to you guys is different. But I have a friend, and this is what she says to me, and she goes, well, at least you have a living mom and dad. I don't have anybody. And she's right, because I don't know how that feels.
Yeah.
Okay? I told her, you're right, and I don't know how that feels, but you can't keep living off of that. It's negative what you're doing. And I said, and you make me feel bad by saying it because I do have parents still living. You know, I don't know how to answer her except to, you know, that's a problem she's got to get through.
And it sounds like she's trying to say that you can't understand where she's at.
I can't.
And that's true.
But here's the thing. I can with the husband part. She lost a husband too. That part, I understand that loss. But as far as she'll say, I don't have anybody. I really don't know how that feels. I don't. So I can't identify.
All you can do is admit that you don't.
I did.
I mean, we don't know the walks.
But that is her defense every time, you know, I make a comment. One of my mom and dad's, well, I wish I had one to go to. Just little things like that. And I'm going, maybe I don't need to hang around this person.
She's married to self-pities.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't need to hear that every time. Why should I hang around somebody or be friends with somebody that does that every time, just in general conversation? Negative.
Her glass is half empty all the time.
Yeah, always half empty. Can't you see the good part? Look at the good part. It wears me out. People wear me out. They do. So I find myself going, okay, I just have to step back. And,
well, right.
You know, I gotta have to be careful what I say. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, where you live, there is an aura of self, of depression anyway.
People. You know,
because different people are there because of reasons. Now, this lady you're dealing with, this is her answer because it causes her not to be responsible for anything.
Right.
So, and she probably likes the self-pity. It sounds like it because she keeps bringing it up.
I told her, I just flat told her, I said, you know, this is what I do. And you've been talking to Margaret. I said, here's the thing. When I do something wrong, and it eats at me, I have to make an amends. It's not about you. It's not about them. It's about me fixing it.
Yeah.
It's what's inside of me that I have to deal with. It has nothing to do with you. You know, you need to learn that perspective. If you're not willing to take some responsibility, you're never going to get better. You're going to keep doing what you're doing. You're going to keep getting what you get. That's just how it works. Change is awful, I'm telling you, but it's also beautiful in itself. Take the time to do it. I love to cook. I cook for one person most of the time. But I'm finding that I enjoy it.
You're learning to love yourself.
Yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
Through that.
Yeah.
through nurturing yourself.
My body.
You're learning to love yourself.
Well, I like the word dissect because that means so much more to me than just cutting into something. It means to take it completely apart. Actually, I looked it up in something else and it said to partition off thoroughly. And I thought, whoa, that just words wake you up. You know, what do you mean partition off thoroughly? And, you know, sometimes you meet somebody and you go, wish I didn't know you. I wish I hadn't met you. You know, you didn't add anything. But I try to look for the good first in a person. Sometimes you're going, oh, please, just don't make me part of that. Somebody else got something they want to share.
John Morgan, you're not saying anything today?
No, I just don't have anything to share.
He's being 18. What?
I said I just like to listen.
Well, it's good to listen, but it's good for us to open up, you know, to each other when we feel comfortable already. You can't make people want to share. It has to be something out of the heart. Yeah. And if I was in a big room of people, I probably would not want to share either. I just let assume somebody else did it. So, with us, it's more comfortable. Morgan, let's take a minute and let you just share from your heart what you said to me in private about Jesus, because I like that. I never heard you say that before, and I need to hear you say it, and probably these do too.
I barely remember the conversation.
Probably.
Well, I guess my understanding of Jesus isn't anchored in a temporal idea, if that makes sense. It's not anchored in a history. It's anchored in what the Word says, which is that the Lamb was slain before the foundation of the world. So, it was already done. The problem was is that humankind, didn't understand that. So it had to be walked out. And in my understanding, I see that played out time and again as the ages started to unfold and came to a culmination with this man that we call Jesus, Yeshua. And for me, it's not a matter of belief or facts about anything about his person. It's not about his the myth that has surrounded him. It's about the truth that he spoke. The simple things that he said. He told, probably one of my favorite scriptures is, they were talking about some people that had passed on, and one of the disciples asked Jesus about it, and he said, well, let the dead tend to the dead. Well, what did he mean by that? I mean, pretty obvious what he meant. If you're spiritually dead, then you're spiritually dead. You might as well be dead. And then, I guess another one of my favorites was, the Pharisees and the Sadducees were, they were trying to trick him, they were asking him questions, but they were being tongue-in-cheek about it and trying to trip him up. And so they asked him, well, oh, Rabbi, and I'm sure they did that with sarcasm, what is the greatest commandment? And he told them. He said, love thy Lord thy God with all thy heart. But then he paused. And I think that it's important.
That he paused.
Because in his understanding, there was no separation between God and man. You know, that's the Maya. That's the illusion. That's the veil of this place.
Yeah.
Is it creates a seeming separation between what is you and what is divine. That's what religion does. It actually serves as just pure religion as a separator. So he said, and love thy neighbor as thyself.
Yeah, he could have left that off. that's a hard part.
The reason why he had to say it that way is because he understood that these people did not understand that they had divinity within them.
Amen.
So, without that understanding, he had to add it so that they would understand, or at least come to a place where they can. And really, that's the whole of the law. And he's right about that. That's all that matters, because if you do that one thing, you understand that you are a piece of divinity, and so is everybody else, then you automatically have love and respect. And if you have those two things, well, all the rest of the Ten Commandments don't matter, because you're not going to break them. It's, you know, a higher form of understanding what law really is about. So, I don't know if I answered the question the way that
you
wanted.
Well, sort of. You said directly, we were talking about Jesus, and you said of all the knowing ones, like Buddha, Krishna, all those names, Muhammad, of all the great greats, Jesus pointed more directly toward divinity and humanity than any other being. And I really like that he pointed at us the straightest. And we have to admit, those other guys were, say some beautiful things. Some of the things Buddha said to me were funny. I mean, very humorous. Because he had this guy that was under him, you know, and the guy was telling him what all he had to do to walk on the water, and Buddha said, well, that's a pity, for a dime you could have rowed across. I thought that was so funny.
It is pretty funny. But, you know, that's how the great teachers spoke.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody was more plain spoken than Jesus.
Buddha also talks about that phrase.
I agree with you.
And he wasn't
pretty funny.
You know, we have this idea of him because we can't separate his divinity and his humanity. It's been drilled into us. But he was offensive.
Oh, yeah.
He was offensive.
I think he was.
You know, he told the Pharisees and Sadducees, your righteousness is like dirty menstrual rag.
Oh, yeah, Lord, have mercy, and that's the worst thing he could have said.
And
disgusting.
If you understand them...
That's disgusting, Morgan.
That's what he said
in the scripture.
he's right.
But he said that to the Sadducees, and these are the religious rulers, so to speak, of the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no wonder they...
He was a rebel, that's for sure.
We're not happy with him.
The Jews were drama queens, and he had to put it in graphic terms, Terry, like you do on Facebook today. If you get into the drama on Facebook, good grief.
What did you call Herod, that fox?
You'll tell that old fox.
Sly fox.
Yeah.
So, well, you know these people that say they're all of God. It's not what you say sometimes. It's not what the perception is. How much of that portion do they have? It's the reality, the bottom line. If we're to believe the Bible, even Jesus had thoughts, second thoughts.
Yes.
He went, like Morgan said, he went out in the wilderness 40 days. It wasn't that he wanted to go out there and not eat and drink for 40 days. He was having a personal conversation with himself, questioning himself, questioning what we call the devil, which was his own
adversary.
Ego.
Yeah.
As to whether he was what that we call the Son of God, which I don't know if that's the right terminology or not, but as God didn't have a wife, or you know, we don't understand that kind of concept. I don't know where God would come up with a
person
to represent him here on earth. It's not for me to question or judge. I can wonder about it, you know. But if Jesus had these thoughts and these issues, what are we? And what are these people who claim to be all of God and they have daily issues that they can't take care of?
Really?
So how does that, you know, how does that make them all of God? I believe every human being has a portion of God in them.
Yes.
We have to. Without that, we wouldn't exist.
Amen.
So it's not whether you do or not, or whether you believe that, is it true? And how much is true to you?
Right, exactly.
You know.
They're just words otherwise. They could just be words that sound good. You know, that sounds good.
They're using words that just sound good.
Yeah.
But the fulfillment of it is not there. No. Can't be.
Well, by their fruits you shall know them, he said.
Well, more than proving it to other people, it's proving it to yourself.
Exactly.
If that's your thought and that's the way you think you have to live your life, and I'm not saying it is or not, but if you think that's the way you have to live the life, then you have to go there and do that.
Well, I think sadly most people don't know themselves very well. They're not
none
really,
of us do.
Really willing to look with. They know other people real well.
Yeah.
We think.
But
we
they do,
do
not.
Well, they think they do.
Well, you know, but they don't really know themselves. I think
I don't think any human being does.
Yeah. So I mean, we're uncomfortable with getting in there and looking around.
Well, I don't think we're really at the real willing place, like you said, because looking into our own personality makes us take responsibility. And I think we ought to know our failings, you know, and know that we have them. Often in my own prayers and stuff, I ask the Lord to show me myself first, because I can see other people, you know. And it's not always with a pretty eye, so I need to look. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so I need to look with the eye of grace. But these speakers and people that we're talking about, I have a rule I go by as I listen to other speakers or people that think they're great speakers, and some of them aren't. To me, they're like a rusty old bucket, a lot of them. And they don't they're not oiled. They need the wheel that does the squeaking gets the oil, right? I think they ought to oil themselves down first after a bath and get under what we call the anointing, because that's what witnesses to you, whether you can help it or like it or not. It'll witness to you if it's clean and it's under a flow. Often I hear people speak, like Johnny said, with knowledge, and it's such a passing order. And it is knowledge, and it's beautiful, but it's still not God. And it's not holy. It's just what they think. Being a beautiful orator doesn't touch me at all.
Knowledge is temporary because the things that we think of knowledge as being something permanent is just temporary. And that knowledge, you know, it's like split an atom. Well, we thought that was the smallest thing there was. Well, they split atom and they got more parts.
That's right. Keeps changing. I mean, knowledge keeps
things changing. Keep changing, and our knowledge keeps expanding. And that's human knowledge. Whether, you know, I don't know anything past that, but all knowledge is temporary. Our knowledge of religion, of Jesus, God, not God, because we don't really know anything about God, but all religions and all concepts and ideas are always changing because we keep locating and finding things that change what even some religion, what we thought religions felt and how they viewed things. We keep finding things that contradict that. That say, well, no, there was more to it than that.
Difference between facts and truth.
So facts and knowledge and truth keeps expanding and changing.
Yes, it's like line upon line, because, you know, a lot of times these things are there all along. They were. We just didn't see it.
Isn't it the truth?
You know, I think that was there all along.
A lack.
How often do you look at something that you looked at and looked at and looked at, and all of a sudden, revelation, right?
A new picture.
Well, I think there's a real big lack in intimacy. And I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about intimacy and relationship.
It's the work of it.
Yeah, there is, that we do like that.
Easy
there,
way
and
out.
It's sad.
Yes.
Well, that's because of fear and humanity. We have.
But it has to begin. You know, there's a huge lack. So.
There's a race to be won. We have to run the race.
Yeah.
You know, we have to get in there and put the sign on or whatever and get our track shoes on, and we have to do the work of it.
Put me in, Coach.
We have to sweat a little
bit. Let the rubber meet the road, yeah.
Yeah, the rubber has to meet the road somewhere. Well, let's stand and have prayer if we're done.